Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parshiot Tetzria Metzora. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, there is a double portion, Parshiot Tetzria and Metzora. As I've mentioned in previous podcasts, the overarching theme of the two parshiot has to do with ritual impurity associated with a person's body, or as the Talmud says, tuma hayotzeit migufo shel adam, impurity that goes out of one's body. I would like to particularly focus on the opening section, which has to do with ritual purity, impurity, as a result of childbirth. In the first section, we are told, if a woman gives birth and has a boy, she is impure for a period of 7 days. But then there is a second period of 33 days, where any blood which emerges from her body is considered to be blood of purity, which does not defile her. Nevertheless, she needs to wait till the end of that 33-day period, till the end of the 40-day period after the birth, before she can bring two offerings, two birds, a sin offering and a burnt offering. And only then is she allowed to once again enter the temple and to partake of sacrifices. If the woman should have a girl, then the period of time is doubled. For 14 days, she is impure. Subsequently, there is a 66-day period where she has blood of purity. And only on the 81st day can she bring the sacrifices which enable her to once again reconnect with the temple. There are a number of questions that emerge from this section. Why should a woman be impure when she gives birth? Impurity has a very negative connotation. Giving birth, we understand as being a very, very positive, perhaps the most positive human experience that one can have. More so, the woman needs to bring a sin offering. What sin did she do? Why is there a distinction made between birthing a male versus having a female? And why in the midst of the laws of ritual purity are we told that on the 8th day, the male child needs to be circumcised? Let me begin by saying that it seems that all ritual purity is a result of death. The ultimate expression of ritual impurity is a dead body. And if we're told that a woman who gives birth is impure, then it must be because there's a certain element of death here. On one level, one could say that the death is reflected in the afterbirth, in all the bleeding that results as the baby is born. And in fact, we know that once upon a time, there was a relatively high incidence of death in childbirth as a result of this bleeding. One could say that when a woman gives birth, she is at the cusp of life and death, and being on that edge defiled her, and hence the need to go through a purification process. If we were to connect this to the story of the Garden of Eden, in the aftermath of eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, God curses the woman and says, "I will increase your sadness. With sadness you shall bear children." So that every time a woman becomes pregnant and has a child, on a certain level she is experiencing that original curse. On a certain level, she is experiencing a mini-death. So that there is a certain intermingling here of bringing life into the world while being on the threshold of death. Perhaps we can add another element. Although bringing a life into the world is a very, very positive, very beautiful thing, but the woman has to now come to terms with the fact that a part of her has now left her. We're all aware of postnatal depression, of the difficulty of parting with that embryo that has become such an integral part of who you are. The period of ritual impurity is in fact a period of introspection, where the woman has to grapple with the basic existential questions of life and death. Of what does it mean to bring life into the world where there's the potential that in the process you may die? What does it mean to have to let go? To be able to take something that was so dependent on you and to allow that to now become an independent entity. And as I've mentioned in a previous podcast, ultimately the goal is purification, to affirm life, to be able to say that despite the difficulties, this life is very, very important and should be continued. More babies should be brought into the world. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, in his commentary, says that the reason why the birth of a girl dictates a double period is because this woman has to go through this reflection process, not only for herself, but for her daughter. And this perhaps explains the insertion of the law of Brit Milah. The extra 7-day period of impurity for a girl is parallel to the Brit Milah ceremony. In a variety of rabbinic sources, we associate the foreskin with impurity, with Brit Milah as being a form of birth. And in the act of Brit Milah, the male child is now experiencing that process of purification, of affirming life, of acknowledging that despite the pain, despite the shedding of blood, or maybe because of that, that is what makes life so meaningful. Our parshiot, which talk about ritual impurity that emerge from one's body, are very much grappling with the issue of life and death. What immediately follows the section of ritual impurity connected with giving birth are the laws of tzara'at, perhaps mistranslated as leprosy. We find in the book of Numbers in chapter 12, when Miriam has tzara'at, she becomes white as snow. Moses prays on her behalf and says, let her not be as one who is dead. So that we have this juxtaposition of the beginning of the parsha, which speaks about life being brought into the world, and the continuation, which speaks about people with white spots, who are like one who is dead, or as Ramban says, who look like cadavers, who are pale, who have lost their vitality, who have lost their divine image. The rabbis tell us that tzara'at is not a physical disease, but is a nega, a plague. But if I were to take this literally, is the touch of God, the touch of God that is giving feedback to someone, to say to them, you are the living dead. There's something wrong with you. Change your ways. And in particular, this is feedback for someone who speaks Lashon Hara, engages in evil speech. Note that the first example of Lashon Hara is in the story of the Garden of Eden, in the whole dialogue between the snake and the woman. The rabbis see the snake as being the quintessential expression of an evil tongue. So that we have a very interesting parallel. The woman who gives birth is parallel to the curse of the woman. With sadness you shall give birth. The following section, leprosy, is perhaps to be connected to the snake who speaks Lashon Hara in a very interesting chiastic form. What does this say to us? It is very important that we know how to grapple with issues of life and death, to be able to value life and to be able to shy away from death. What seems to characterize the human reality is that all too often we bring death into our lives. Adam and Eve, who are put into a garden, who are given every opportunity to affirm life, to eat of the tree of life, and to live forever, somehow are not satisfied with that, and ultimately bring upon themselves death, pain, sadness. So too the mitzorah. The tzara'at would not happen unless someone had created that rupture, unless someone who had taken a situation that was harmonious and shattered it. And even the woman who gives birth, we're giving birth and bringing life, should be an expression of purity, the ultimate positive act. To what degree are there regrets? To what degree is there sadness? To what degree is it that there may be even death in the process? And as a result, a fear of that stifles someone to bring life, because that may lead to death. With all these laws, the Torah is trying to teach us to affirm life, to recognize that we live in an imperfect reality, that in fact, life and death commingle, and that we somehow have to bear the difficulties and nevertheless go and affirm life. Today, we commemorated the remembrance of the Holocaust, a very, very sad day, a day where it is very easy to focus on destruction, on death, on pain and suffering. But it's important for us on this day to affirm life and from the ashes to create life, to be able to see what was before the destruction and what can be after the destruction, to not be taken down and add pain to what already exists, but to relieve the pain by appreciating what could be and actualizing. In Israel, we are very, very aware during this time period of the rhythm of mourning and rejoicing, of going from death to life. Next week, we will be celebrating Independence Day, Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Perhaps the Torah in these two parshiyot is trying to make us aware of the need to focus on life. We begin with life and we end with life. In the middle, there are things that are painful, that are defiling, that have elements of death. We need to somehow go through the process and affirm life. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.